something about the agenda.
So for everybody, just a quick announcement. The agendas and the agenda packets are in the back of the room if you need one. And then if anyone would like to make a public comment, there are forms in the back of the room. You just need to fill it out and then give it to me.
So I'm calling this meeting to order. It is 1:36 on May 18th. This is the LARIC open meeting. So we're going to start with a Pledge of Allegiance, and I'm going to ask Mr. Matthew Oberlander to lead us in the pledge. I miss you so much, I want to see you up here.
Put your right hand over your heart, face the flag, and follow along with me. I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Matthew. So, we want to approve the agenda. Is there a motion to approve the agenda?
Motion.
Second.
Any discussion?
Yes, there are a couple of corrections. They're minor. Under action item 6.2, I and H, we want to make that CASA. C-A-S-A-S.
Uh-huh. Well, are we talking about the agenda or the minutes?
So first we're doing the agenda.
Oh, sorry.
Got it. Any discussion on the agenda? Can I have a vote to approve the agenda?
Aye.
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 Motion carried. Is there a motion to approve the minutes from April 27th, 2018?
Motion.
Second.
Discussion? Now, Amelia.
On action item 6.2, under I and H, it should read CASAS, C-A-S-A-S.
Noted. Did you guys note that? Any other things? So, motion to approve the minutes, to approve the minutes, vote.
Aye.
Oh, aye. You guys are still reading. Sorry about that. I'm an aye too, just so we know.
Aye.
Motion carried. So the next section of our agenda is public comment. Michelle, you have something.
Yep. Anyone may offer public comment to the board. If you'd like a speaker form, they're available in the back. Complete the speaker form and give it to me. Each speaker will be given 3 minutes. A maximum of 10 speakers will be permitted. We have one speaker right now. So we'll go ahead and hear from speaker number one.
Hello, how are you? I'm Megan Katz. This is Randall Henson. We are librarians in the Los Angeles Public Library Educational Literacy Office, Lifelong Learning Department. So we just want to mention it's a summer reading challenge. Yay, it's not just for kids anymore. there are packets. They look like this. In the back on the table. Feel free, anybody, to take one. And there's enough, I'm sure there are. And basically, this is a fun, free, inclusive program available to all ages from just born to over 100. Anybody can join. And all literacy levels are welcome. They count reading in time. So it does not matter what you read, how much time you take, just you read a certain amount of time, boom, you get prizes. I have some lovely prizes to show off. That's right. Oh. And you get this.
Nice.
And you get, there's actually lists of the prizes in your packet. Let's see, I haven't even seen all of the grand prize. There's a drawing for the grand prize, which is a party in the sky at OUE Sky Save.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
So that's pretty cool. And the babies get a little board book. So that's really fun. We also have all kinds of things going on all summer, most of which are open to adults, or some of which fewer open to children and teens. Summer author program, so authors and illustrators coming to the libraries to speak to whoever wants to see them and interact with them. All of this is free, by the way. Summer lunch, June 11th to August 3rd, that is for youth ages 2 to 18. And it's at 15 different branches in Central Library. So check your sheet that's in your packet, and that'll tell you all the branches that have that. Full steam ahead, all kinds of steamy steam, science, technology, engineering, art, math programs, some of which children, teens, some of which are for adults that are really awesome. You can, like, build a robot or something like that. And finally, L.A. Made, how am I doing on time? Not too bad. L.A. Made, somewhere in here is L.A. Made. Oh, it might be this. Yeah. Which is cultural programs actually all over the entire city in libraries. The card here is just for Central Library, just because that's all I could get at a moment's notice. But there are just dozens and dozens of programs. And so you just go to the website on there and you will see all of them. Okay, that may be it. So check out the packet and find out everything going on for everyone, including adults, at the Los Angeles Public Libraries this summer. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'd like to thank you so much for the presentation. I'm wondering, can we, I don't know who this goes to, but somebody, staff, Lyric staff, could we get maybe a link to our Lyric webpage of the programs from the library, maybe? I think that would be really cool to link up with, so that, you know, folks can get more information on it. We'd love to promote it.
Awesome.
So I don't know who that goes to.
Yeah.
So Lee, maybe?
So staff. So okay. So the
okay,
Lyric staff.
Staff, okay, super. Thank you.
So just a quick nifty thing that the staff is doing now, as a result of our meetings and discussions, they're capturing a chart of the things that we're requesting. They have numbers on them, who requested it, so that they're able to follow up a little bit easier. Because I know we're all saying a bunch of things, and they're like, which are we supposed to do? So that's one for today.
And next we'll come on all of our board resolutions, right?
Right. Then they're all those. So the next section of our agenda, our program updates, what we've done is we've created some regular agenda topics as placeholders, just so that we will have stuff in the future. But for right now, the first topic was innovation and best practices, and we have nothing to report for this month. Next, we have Grace Ocampo from the LARIC office, who will provide us with an update on the consolidated Q2 expense and carryover report.
Hi. Good afternoon. Good afternoon. My presentation will be in three parts. The initial piece would be on update on the quarter two expense and carryover report. And then the second piece would be the data and accountability budget. Then I will go over some deadlines and the 80-90 budget. So for the 2017-18 budget, As we had discussed in the previous board meeting, the third quarter report as of March 31st is due by June 1st. Budget revisions will have to be certified also at that time, or it's due also at the same time. And the Q3 report will have to be certified by the consortium by June 30th. The spending target for quarter three is 45% of the carryover in new funds. For the fourth quarter ending June 30th, the reports are due by September 1st, and the budget revisions are also due at the same time. The consortium needs to certify those reports by September 30th. And the target for Q4 is 60% of the carryover in new funds.
So just a clarifying question. So September 30th, so there's a September 1st date and a September 30th date. So I just want to get clear on the difference between those two.
Okay.
What's due on the 1st versus what's due on the 30th?
The 1st would be the member report.
Okay.
So each member is required to submit their expense report.
Right.
And then the LARIC office will have to do the consolidation and certify that by the 30th.
Okay, got it. Thank you.
And then on the next slide, we have a summary here of the year-to-date budget and expenses. On column A, we have the revised carryover, which is about $26 million, and then the revised fiscal year 2018 allocation of about $121.87 million. This is after the redistribution of the funds from the prior MOUs.
So A says there's a carryover.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just looking at my number for a second, 632,455. We did not have a carryover, so that's the MOU distribution.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because Montebello had a carryover of...
Right.
About $4.6 million that was redistributed.
Right. But maybe, and I'm just thinking that the column should be carryover and then Montebello redistribution, because not, I don't think LAUSD had an $18 million carryover when we walked into that year.
No, because it was $14 million, and then out of the redistribution, LAUSD got $3.25 million. So that's total to $18 million.
I don't think that column A should reflect carryover. It should reflect, there should be two columns, a carryover of the end of the year and then Montebello's, what we got from Montebello.
Okay, I have the details.
Okay,
here.
Perfect.
So,
do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, I think so. But so column A is revised carryover from 16-17.
Because there was $4.67 million from Montebello.
Right.
So that carryover was redistributed. For instance, for Burbank, there was close to $1 million in carryover, and they had received $785,000.
So the revised carryover is the 16-17 carryover this year for the fiscal year 16-17. So that's 16-17. Okay, so that plus the Montebello reallocation, if you will, is and that's what the revised 17-18. That's what column B is. Revised 17-18. Is that what column B is? Okay. So column B represents the carryover.
No, column B would be the initial 17-18 allocation, and there was an ongoing allocation from Montebello from the 360 from the $1.26 million.
So I'm sorry. So what is column B? Revised 2017-18. Is that what that is?
Yeah, that's column A and B.
Okay, so 2017-18. And so, for example, the difference with LATCD is $5,516,000, and then we somehow ended up with another million something in revised. And what does that represent?
For LATCD, so the initial carryover was about $5.5 million.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you started the 17-18 initial allocation, there was 7,185,000. And then LACCB received about 86,000. So that those two allocations totaled to 7.27 million.
Okay, Adrian, does that make sense to you?
It should be broken up.
It does make sense to me, but yes, it makes sense to me.
Okay.
We discussed how this.
May she speak?
Sure.
Yeah. We discussed how this works, and your questions are proving that it's a little unclear that we needed to present this information differently. But what they're packaging all the different pass-throughs and everything else together, and some of the states also asking you to report your current allocation, your rollover together, so that's why you see, you know, some numbers that don't make sense. All the information there is just the way that it's required to be reported to the state, and the way that it's packaged are different. So I think as point people, we can go back and work to make it a little clearer and easier to follow the flow.
So what I want it to have on there clearly is a column that is 16-17 carryover, initial carryover.
Yeah.
Then the Montebello piece that we got, and then the rest of these columns. But those two should be, they were very different things. So for them to show up in a thing called carryover revised, they're not really my carryover, right? It was the Montebello distribution.
Well,
so that's
and the way the states have us group it now is they're right. Grouped together, and they take off the top what your carryover is, because that has to be spent first.
Right, and so at the state level, I understand that they combine things, but for us to understand each of our individual situations, I think it's critical that it be separated out in a way that we can see.
So Ms. Ocampo, we understand we can create any kind of a spreadsheet we need to create. Is this particular one sort of aligned with how the state is wanting us to report it? Is that sort of, okay.
Yeah.
So that's why this format was chosen, is because it aligns with how we're reporting to the state, correct?
So the state, so NOVA system has this this
so
chart in it, you're
when
saying.
You go into NOVA, you will see the carryover, and then the current allocation, and then the total budget. That's why this report is broken like that.
Right, but even if you report it to the state, I don't want the state. I don't want to be reported to the state that that Culver City has a $632,000 carryover.
That's your revised. That includes your carryover and your current allocation.
It includes the carryover plus Montebello's distribution.
But that's still your dollars. So it includes everything that's been allocated to Culver City, or in this case, LACCD, if you want to use it.
Right.
It looks at our carryover, it looks at our allocation, it looks at any pass-throughs that have been passed from LAUSD, because we've done some MOUs, looking at Ms. Ocampo, because she's the expert, and then that have come to part of our allocation. So we had great discussion about what's the best way to present this information. Do we create the dialogue that, and I understand that the strengths of both reporting, that is everything in a separate bucket, or do we present it the way the state sees it, so then we know the total dollars at play?
Yeah, I mean, I think so it's a great question, because it's sort of like, you know, you can put data in any format you want. The question is, what are you going to do with what's presented? So I think the point is, we're really looking at how districts are spending, right? Given where we are this year, taking into consideration all the pots of funding. So I'm not sure, I guess from my point of view, I mean, I'm happy to go along with whatever spreadsheet and move dollars around. At the end of the day, it's still the same amount of money that has to be spent by a certain deadline.
Absolutely.
How it's presented doesn't make any difference to me, but I think for the purposes of the board and the public, just being transparent about how folks are spending it down over the course of the school year is my understanding of it.
Bob?
So, and Mr. Stark just got to, I think my biggest point here. There may be the way that the state looks at it, because they understand how the numbers are consolidated, but for the purposes of transparency and our understanding, And even for the lay person, such as the person that I report to, for example, to want to understand what that means over there, the more information that's there in terms of the different pots of money, the easier it is for anybody to understand, whether it's this chief business officer back at one of the school districts, or in my case, the chancellor, who might want more detail. Because it'd be hard for me to break out exactly what that means there. Now, maybe once we learn what this means, that'd be one thing, but I think you want to have a document that can, that the anybody from the public can take and say, okay, see what the money is, where it's going, and what categories are. Anyway.
Thanks. Oh,
or
go ahead.
And more details, like revised.
And more details. Mm-hmm.
No.
Sorry.
That's, you know, it comes the bucket. And then
So I think it sounds like everyone's kind of more or less in agreement. I mean, if there's direction to staff that needs to be given in terms of future, how this is presented, I mean, it sounds like we just need to say the word, right?
Yeah, let's do it then.
Yeah.
Clarify on proving one that brings that on the next for the breakdown.
Yeah. That's fine. Good. Yeah.
Yeah. And in the Montebello thing, we know will be a one-time deal anyway,
yeah,
so
right.
Let's just put it in
make
there.
Make it clear that it is one time. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, sorry.
So on this table, I had also included the quarter two expenditures from the reports that were provided as of December 31. So on following, you will have there the balance. So out of the total $148 million for LARIC, we had spent about $60.3 million, and the balance is about $87.6 million. For LARIC, we had spent about 40.78% of the budget, and we also have there the quarter two spending for each member.
I know this isn't part of the state report, or would it be? So we have an administrative overhead function, which I guess is where is that buried within LAUSD, or I mean, should we have a
Well, I think if we let Mr. Campo continue, I believe there's a section which you're going to be covering the set aside for the LARIC office. Is that correct? It's on slide five. Sorry, I was reading ahead. I know I shouldn't do that.
So I recognize that, but it doesn't need to be reported there, because this is just, or is it basically a percentage of all of that operation is buried within all of our overall budgets on that chart, for example. In other words, in our revised 17-18 allocation column B, our contributions to the LARIC overhead is represented in those numbers?
That is included in the LAUSD.
Okay, thank you. I'm sorry, it's included where?
In the LAUSD.
So in LAUSD, it's buried within LAUSD. Okay.
So for the data and accountability fund, so I have here the details of the allocations for member districts. So we had received about $4.68 million, and those funds have to be spent by December 31. If you notice, the LAUSD budget for the LARIC office, the LAUSD budget includes the allocations for the LARIC office for $446,000. So that is part of the $936,000. So as we wrap up the close of the Data and Accountability Fund, the LARIC office wants to monitor this fund to ensure that it is all spent. And then we have here some important dates. So those funds have to be spent by December 31st, the midterm.
I'm sorry. I know you're going to mail it here. But did you just say that under the redistribution of software development from BUSD, that column, that within the $936,000 is $446,000 for the LARIC office?
Yes.
Is all of the LARIC office coming out of data and accountability? Is that the only part it's coming out of?
So it's for the LARIC office's data and accountability costs?
It has to be. Adrienne.
So in the Point People meeting, we asked for expense and revenue report for the LARIC office because we lost, you know, and my district lost 26,000. I think LAUSD lost 300,000. And then, you know, appropriately apportioned it. Each district lost money from data accountability dollars to fund the LARIC office staff, but that's a lot of almost $500,000 for 6 months worth of work that we all, when these positions just got hired. So we asked, what does that look like? Because for me, I was really banking on the $109,000 versus the $86,000. So we were concerned of what that really looks like. Because we also know, head LARIC, we pulled off about $800,000 off the top of some previous allocations to fund LARIC activities. For that money kit, and the biggest activity being the conference. So we were wondering if that offset also was going into LARIC office to try to get a better understanding of the full financial picture. Does that make sense? So we want to see what the full picture is, right? Because this was pulled off of the most recent allocation that was returned from Burbank. $446,000 was pulled off of that.
Right. But so my question to you, Adrienne Ann, is are you asking additional questions or you're providing clarification on this?
Got it. Okay. I think it's a lot of money for 6 months worth of expenses when the staffing just came on. And does that make sense? Especially when we have other money previously that's been allocated to LARIC functions. And as a Point People, we discussed, I don't know. We didn't go to the point of consensus, so I can't say we had consensus, right? But we talked about when one-time allocations come down, that LARIC office support should not be pulled off from those, like data accountability, specialized funds. It should be pulled off the general allocations to the consortium. The data accountability is a specialized pocket of money, bucket of money that we need to build our data and accountability systems. To lose that money from that bucket to each of our respective districts is a hit. That we think it shouldn't come from specialized dollars. We did not go to a consensus vote on that in the Point People. You know, it was, and we haven't fully explored it, but that was one of the discussions that we had.
So the question started for me in terms of the operation LARIC office out of this redistribution of software development money that currently came from Burbank, because I guess you couldn't spend the money, right? Is that why it came back to you?
No. I believe we have the RFP, and then that process was halted, and then that funding was returned.
Okay. So, and then the fund, the office, because it was just a pot of money, it was determined that we would just take the money from that money to fund the office. And that's your comment, Adrienne, is that. So we have kind of two issues here. We use the money to fund out of a specialized pot of money. Maybe what we should have done is put that money back into the general operating fund. If we could do that.
We couldn't do that. So
take it from the general operating fund versus...
Right. But we couldn't actually take data and accountability money and then put it in back into regular.
So instead, we build LARIC operating costs beyond software development. Right? So we use software dollars to support other operations other than software. I'm not sure that that's...
Other than data
and accountability, and if down the road in some potential review by some entity, they might call us on that. So it sounds like we need to we need to review our budgeting methodology, right?
Mm-hmm.
And
definitely an item.
We need to look at the issue that Dr. Mullen brought up, as well as reallocating our funds in the proper categories, I guess, from the beginning.
So we're going to let you continue. I'm writing down notes and I'm figuring out how the heck I'm going to wrap up what we just did.
So on this slide, we have the reporting dates. So those funds will expire December 31 of this year. We are requesting for midterm expense and progress reports by June 15. If there are any budget modifications and quarter four expenses by September 3rd, the budget revisions, if applicable, by September 2017. Budget modification request in fiscal 19 Q1 expenses by December 3rd. The final expense and progress report by January 21st of 2019. And then the closeout report by February 11th, 2019.
So the first, the top arrows, so data, midterm, budget modifications, and budget revision, are all for 17, 18 dollars or before, and then the budget modifications for 18, 19 down.
This is one-time fund.
This is data accountability money. Got it. Sorry about that. Yeah. Okay. Perfect.
Mm-hmm. Right.
This is one-time fund. Sorry.
So for the 18-19 budget, for 18-19, we had received a total of $126.8 million, and that includes $5 million COLA. The 19-20 preliminary allocation is estimated to be at the same level. On the next slide, please. This is the CFAD for 18-19. This slide shows you the breakdown of the $126 million that we had received. The $102 million under LAUSD includes an allocation for the LARIC office amounting to $865,000. The CFAD has been submitted on May 2nd, and it has been approved by the state last May 10th. The CFAD is intended for each consortium to provide the state their fiscal structure for 18-19 and an allocation schedule of funding to members for 18-19. The state anticipates apportionment schedules to be released by August 2018. This is something new for fiscal year 2019. The governor's budget for 18-19 includes trailer bill language that will change the reporting of AEBG member districts' indirect expenditures. For K-12 and county offices, that would be the lesser of the CEBG approved rate for 18-19 or 5%. For community colleges, it would be the lesser of the negotiated rate for 18-19 or 5%. This will become effective upon the enactment of the California state budget. These are some important dates pertaining to the 18-19 allocation. On August 15, that would be the due date for the consortium-level work plan. September 30 is the due date for the 18-19 budget and work plan, which has to be certified by the consortium director already by October 30. And the quarterly expenditure reporting for 18-19 will begin on December 1. For Q1 and every quarter thereafter. So that concludes the presentation.
Anybody have questions, comments before I make them? So one thing that I'm going to ask that happens in all future presentations of spreadsheets is that the LARIC office be its own line. We know that it goes with LAUSD, but so that LAUSD doesn't look like it's also you know, so the percentage that's for the LARIC office isn't looking like it belongs to LAUSD, you know, so it doesn't look like it's a higher percentage when it, in fact, it's lower. But it also allows us to see the differences of things. So my request, so I'm directing staff, I'm not asking nicely, that every budget spreadsheet has that separated out so that we can see that easily. And then the other thing is, and I think, Bob, this was supposed to answer a lot of the questions that you had from the last meeting about dates and times and funding. And while it's great on this, if there were a way to create a chart that has the this year's spending, this is the type of money, and this is when it has to be spent by or reported by or whatever that is. The information you have here is great. I think in a kind of chart that we can put up in our offices or whatever that we know right away, all those things. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. That would be awesome. Thank you. Okay, so the next section that we have is for professional development, and we actually don't have a report, but I am going to ask that the LARIC office look into setting up a CalPro PLC training for all districts for next year. I think that's a conversation we've mentioned at lots of board meetings where we said that that's what was missing. So we actually request that you contact CalPro, find out what it would cost to do it again for 3 days and maybe get some possible dates. And please make sure that it's a PLC training and not a communities of practice training. Unless you want to see me blow my lid again. Just kidding. And just another thought around PD is we were able to, CalPro did a PD on evidence-based reading training, reading instruction that was hosted at LAUSD that Culver City participated on, which I thought was amazing. But what would be great is if the LARIC website could have any PDs that the different agencies, member agencies, are doing that we could share with each other so that we can look and see, oh, this is where we can tell our teachers there are things happening. And also, if that could be linked to OTAN and CalPro, and even if you wanted to make it easier, have things kind of organized by topic. But at least I'll give you some time, Justin, I promise. But definitely the PD stuff on the LARIC website. The next part of our agenda, Deanna's waiting patiently, is from LAUSD, and Deanna will provide an overview of the CCAE priorities discussed at the CCAE conference.
Good afternoon, everyone. According to the Legislative Analyst Office, capacity and funding in K-12 adult schools need to be expanded to meet the demand for services. This year, for the 2018-19 budget cycle, immigrant integration and serving communities of need will inform policy advocacy. There were 6 budget and legislative priorities that were presented as part of this budget cycle. The first one is to establish the indirect rate for ABG, capped at 5% or less, with greater equity. And Ms. Ocampo showed that on the screen. So in the absence of specific language related to ABG funding, many districts in the past had to use their district-wide indirect rate, which in some cases was as high as 12%. So this varying indirect rate caused an inequity in access to funding by consortia, including even among members of the same consortia. So the governor's May revision includes this indirect rate cap at 5%. The second priority was to increase ABG funding and establish an ABG COLA. Current funding doesn't come close to maintaining the capacity of services K-12 adult schools were able to provide in 2008. With each passing year, the ABG funds are serving fewer and fewer students. The additional funding amount proposed was $110 million for a total of $610 million in fiscal year 18-19, in addition to instituting a COLA. The breakdown of the $110 million is $50 million for overall cost increases, including PERS and STIRS increases, which were dramatic, $30 million in PTE support, and $30 million for a 6% targeted performance bonus system. The governor's May revision includes a 2.71% COLA, but no increase in ABT funding. Priority number three, establish performance-based funding for communities of need. In line with the priorities listed in the CLASP report, and that's the Center for Law and Social Policy, it's a guiding document for ABT Consortia, serving communities of need is key. And it's also important to formalize the importance of immigrant integration into the Ed Code under the ABG framework. So the priority was to establish a funding framework for leveraging and incentivizing new funding to go towards serving and producing outcomes associated with those with most barriers to education. $30 million, and that's 6% of the previous $500 million ABG allocation, was recommended for this incentivized program. The governor's main revision does not include this program. Priority number four, incorporate immigrant integration metrics based on the ALLIES, that's the Alliance for Language Learning, Integration, Education, and Success framework, into the ABG statute. To ensure that adult learners that are best served by K-12 adult schools not be left out, amend the ABG statute to explicitly reference and include these metrics, which are based on pathways that identify, implement, and measure critical factors for immigrant integration. These metrics are measurable both qualitatively and quantitatively and are delineated in the ALLIES white paper. Immigrant integration strategies can be also written into Consortia's three-year regional comprehensive plan. The governor's May revision does not include this priority. Number five, revise the term grant in adult education block grant to change the perception that the funding is temporary and short term. Suggestions include allocation, funding, or apportionment. The governor's May revision does not include this priority. Number six, institute a common fee policy for career tech education for all adult education providers. SB 173 and AB 104 directed the state to investigate the development of a common fee policy for adult ed providers. While this issue remains a priority, it can't be addressed without additional funding for providers under ABG, and the additional request of $30 million for CTE support was not included in the May revision. The governor's May revision obviously does not include this priority. However, CCAE and CAIA are continuing to work on specific recommendations for a common approach to CCAE. Four of the six platform priorities are not included in the May revision. CCAE urges adult ed stakeholders to contact their legislators so that they voice the need for one, additional funding, two, inclusion of immigrant integration metrics into the adult ed block grant, and three, to change the term grant in the name adult ed block grant.
Thank you. Does anybody have any questions or comments?
Thanks for the report. I guess the question is really, I guess, for the board in terms of, do we feel these reflect our priorities as a consortium? So, because I don't feel they do, personally, but this is just one board member's opinion. For example, the ALLIES framework is, you know, there's nothing wrong with it, but it's coming from one consortium as something that should be rolled out statewide. I don't necessarily agree with that, but, you know, I think one of the ideas that's come up in the past is, you know, as the state's largest consortium, I'm kind of wondering why we, you know, shouldn't maybe consider having our own policy and advocacy group or wing, arm, whatever, whatever you want to call it. CCAE, as we all know, is very K-12 focused. I don't know if there's a lot of representation from the community college, for example. So I think we have a unique opportunity with LARIC to you know, maybe select a policy and advocacy agenda that's something that's more reflective of what we care about as a consortium, maybe. I mean, I don't know. I'm just looking at it, and from my point of view, those don't reflect what I would want to see from a statewide perspective, and certainly not for LERIC. Not to say that all those things are bad, but I don't know that I would call them priorities per se. For example, and you know, I can shut up for now because I know that we're going to have time later, but you know, the LAO report for adult ed, which came out in February, has a lot of recommendations that aren't reflected here that I think are really important and are very relevant to this consortium, i.e. student funding formula, just to pick one big one. And that's not reflected here. So I guess I'm just kind of throwing it out there again that I think it would be really important for this consortium to have, I think, a LERIC-specific policy and advocacy group. And because, quite honestly, I think we're still, you know, not us in this region, but I would say as a state, we still sort of have two different groups lobbying. We have adult ed community college, adult ed K-12, typically. And I think we have a great opportunity to really, if we're going to make a real impact, because you know the governor didn't include a lot of this stuff, there's a reason why, because it's not a priority for the governor. But if we're kind of going hand in hand with, again, largest consortium, you know, districts here with LACCD, the largest community college district, and really advocating and proposing some policies based on some things like the LAO report, for example, versus, you know, things that are coming from various other smaller consortia and proposed for the state, we might have a real opportunity to kind of move the agenda in a lot of ways. So anyway, that's my pontificating speech on that issue.
Dr. Miller?
So I agree entirely with my colleague. On the new funding formula for the California Community College System, which is sort of hanging in the balance at the moment, it was looking very good and now it's struggling a bit. But the one interesting thing about the new funding formula is that it carved out of the new funding formula adult ed, non-credit and adult ed in the CDCP, the Career Development Career Planning courses, to fund, to maintain funding at 100%, as opposed to the new funding formula, which was going to be a 60%, 20%, 20%. I don't need to get in details of that. So at least on the community college side, there is a strong recognition that adult ed needs to be treated in a different way. And I agree with Mr. Stark wholeheartedly that this consortium being the largest and representing what it represents should have a voice, and we should probably have a legislative and committee of some sort. And we should get together and develop our own priorities and even consider the possibility of an advocate. Yep. That would work alongside CCAE and other entities up there to represent our interests, which are huge in the Southern California, in this part of Southern California. So I agree strongly that would be a good thing for us to look into. And, you know, obviously this year we're late, very late to the party, right? But if we do this fast enough, we can actually start our work this summer and into the fall and be able to effectuate some impact, or have some impact next year.
Yeah, and I think, you know, with the amazing stuff, and I would say renaissance, really, what's going on in this region with adult ed in terms of new programs and articulations and things happening between the K-12s and the community college and innovation that we've heard about from all of the districts, you know, I think a big part of how we're going to be getting more funding is continuing to show the return on investment.
Right.
You know, here's where we were before, you know, AEBG. Here's where we are now. Look at how we're moving the needle on all these things. And what I'm saying is not necessarily creating a whole separate arm or, you know, per se, but I just know that, for example, LAUSD and LACCD, I mean, we have government relations staff, you know, and it would be great if we were all, whether we're working with LACCD or LAUSD or, you know, the various groups, that we were actually all advocating for like two or three of the big ticket main issues instead of all these fractured kind of what I would call, in some cases, kind of special interest needs that I don't think reflect really what's important in terms of moving things forward with adult ed statewide. And certainly, I don't think reflect, again, my humble opinion, what the priorities would be, at least for this region.
If I may, from doing a lot of lobbying and advocating myself within my district and for CCAE and for CAIA, I think both my colleagues have brought some good points up in regards to finding an advocate, I say for our consortium, in a public relation type of setting. So I think if staff, if we can look into something like that, I'm all in favor of that, because we do need somebody in Sacramento knocking on the doors and looking at our best interests as a consortium. Like Mr. Stark has said numerous times, we're the biggest consortium in the state of California. So I think that's something that needs to be well taken into consideration, and I think that's something we as a board need to look at to continue to move forward to lead the other consortiums within the state. So that's my recommendation, and if my colleague can maybe support me on that and see where we go. We already have a faculty or staff in place now for our LARIC office. This may be another piece to the puzzle, but it's just a recommendation.
So it goes without saying, I agree with everything that's been said. Madam Chair, I think that what we need to do is we need to have at least from my point of view, a board workshop on the LAO report and to really look at those recommendations. I think that came out, so that come out in January?
February, yeah.
February.
Yeah.
And look at that. We did it kind of a cursory review, but we need to really have a workshop and discuss this. And we can have an advocate, but it doesn't do any good if we don't have a position.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So we need to really have a position in order then to direct that advocate in terms of where we want to go. I was at a meeting, and I will tell you all that the CDE knows very well that we're the largest consortium. Mm-hmm. And we're kind of like that sleeping giant. Mm-hmm. And we got to shake things up. And I think this would be a great place to start, is looking at that LAO report, identifying the directions that we want to take. There are some things here. Obviously, we need increased AV funding. I mean, who would say no to more funding? But what we need to point out is what we're going to do with it.
Right. Mm-hmm.
What we're going to do with that funding. And so that would be what I would say is a place that I'd like to see us start at.
And just in our handy-dandy little chart of items, Dr. Miller, you had on the last meeting asked to agendize a board subcommittee of legislative affairs, develop a policy agenda, include two board members, possibly explore if LARIC can sponsor the bill. So I'm going to ask this more of a protocol question. How do we do that? How do we get that going? Because it's not currently an agenda item.
Right. So there's two ways to do it. One, you agendize it as something here, or you, as the chair, have the ability, working with the staff, in this case Lanzi, to request that this committee be put together. You have
okay.
the authority to do that.
So I can, without bringing it, since it's come up so many times, I can just request that we start this subcommittee.
Yeah, and then, you know,
and then
5 years from now when you're done being the chair,
yeah, right.
next year you make another decision.
I won't have. You know,
it's okay.
I won't be able to hide my grave in.
But the other way is that you know, as we mature, we can establish board standing subcommittees.
Right.
You know, where we work, we have budget and finance, we have institutional effectiveness, we have our facilities and master planning, and we have our legislative and public affairs. Those are the four standing subcommittees of our board who drives our staff, me, and others crazy on a regular basis, but that just goes with the territory, right?
So a follow-up just on the protocol okay. stuff. With that, we can establish a subcommittee. For board workshops, do we need to establish a board workshop day as a body together, or how
well,
does that work?
From a Brown Act point of view,
right.
you need to post it,
right.
because it's an open meeting. That's one. And but beyond that, again, as the chair,
you're giving me a lot of power, Bob. I'm
well,
saying.
I mean, as the chair, you know, you've heard some recommendations okay. here, and you can
right.
act on the recommendations.
Okay, I was just not sure about that part of the protocol.
Yeah, but I agree. I think, as Mr. Uriassi said, we need to kind of dig in and see if any of those recommendations or anything we're interested in sort of getting behind and and moving forward in terms of any kind of a policy agenda, because obviously we don't really have one now, and if we're relying on other organizations to sort of provide that, I think we're missing an opportunity. So it's, I think we're all in agreement, and I'd like to, I agree, I think that study session and maybe going deeper on some of those recommendations might be a good place to start.
Perfect, thank you, because that was my question with some of these things on there. How do I move them? Do I have to do it here? Okay, got it. So the next item is we actually created an agenda item for always called the LARIC Office Update, where we will have LARIC staff, office staff, each of the LARIC office staff give us an update or share a quick update about the projects they're working on, including the support and participation with all the member districts. So just so that we keep everything transparent. So, Justin, are you starting? Who's going first? Michelle? Justin? And Grace, I think we'll let you off the hook today. We got you earlier. And Rochelle, I think we're good, unless you're dying to say something. Okay. All right.
Some of the things I've been working on are actually on later on the agenda, so I'll skip over those. Oh, there we go, that's better. Just some of the projects they're working on downtown is continuing the process of making sure that our operations are compliant with the Brown Act, and that we're still refining our open meeting process. And then the other thing that we're beginning to look at the Robert's Rules and figuring out how we can align with that. One of the things that that AEBG TAP website has posted is the bylaws that other consortia have created. Mm. So we've been looking at going back to our minutes and pulling out where you guys discussed how the operations of our consortia, looking at can we put together kind of a draft of our bylaws. Mm. I've also been spending time doing research and doing trainings and webinars and things just so that we can get up to speed with promising practices that other consortia are doing. And then attended the CTE conference, and specifically the legislative updates were the most interesting, and there was one specifically co-presented by the CTE rep and someone from the Chancellor's office. And they were talking about moving forward on developing our annual plan and then the next 3-year plan. And they're still working on developing their template. They're hoping to have something by the end of June, maybe into the summer. Their advice to us right now, if we're eager to get started working on those things, was to go look at the ED code, look at the items that are in there that we need to address, and to start to create a list of guiding questions, because they said that's exactly what they're going to do, is list some guiding questions so they can start to formulate a plan. So we did do that. We looked at on NOVA, they had some template headings, although they don't have all the details filled in yet, but we did capture those headings, looked at the class report, and Deanna and I worked on creating a list of guiding questions that we put together to kind of start to format a plan. We did provide that to the point person's team to figure out how they would like to use that, if they would, as a tool. And then some of the other things I did that were supporting the other school districts. I did visit Culver City Unified School District as part of their LARIC rep to their data team meeting, where they were talking about how to best capture AEBG data into their current systems. And then we also, as a LARIC team, presented to all the advisors at the LAUSD quarterly meeting too, just on what the AEBG priorities are. And then we're looking forward to next week going to Montebello to their CTE fair, which Justin will talk more about.
Thank you. Justin.
Thank you. Good afternoon. So work continues on the website. You know, we're pushing a lot to create a brand for LARIC, so it's recognizable. A lot of the time that I spent when I was preparing for the project was looking at looking at consortium websites throughout the state of California. I looked at everyone. The only ones I didn't look at are ones that don't exist.
just to get an idea of what they look like, what they're doing, some of the content on the sites, so we can make sure that anybody that has some really good innovative stuff, good innovative content, that that we have it as well. One of the things that is a real priority for us is, in the research that I've done on websites, is we typically have about 6 or 7 seconds for somebody to come to the website and either decide they want to stay or go. There also needs to be a call to action. So those two things are being incorporated in our website, as well as making sure that there's good access for teachers so they can easily see PDs. There are great links so that they know what's going on. In the future, the goal is to create sort of an a la carte menu as we increase capacity with PDs to get out to the PDs, to record the PDs, so a teacher can actually go click on a subject area they're interested in and actually view the PD. Short of that, what we'll do in the interim is try to get the PowerPoints that are available on the website so that teachers can go quickly and easily and access those. And I just wanted to share with you just a mock-up of where we're going. If you like it, this is where we're going. If you don't like it, it's just an idea. So basically, what it's going to be is this. We kind of reconstituted the LARIC logo, made it a little brighter, put a border around it so it pops a little bit more. The sliders, as they come across, this is just one broad subject area. It's going to be LARIC teaches, LARIC inspires, LARIC learns. So when somebody goes, if you'll notice, what we did was we made sure the pictures were bright, colorful, pull you in. There's a specific emotion going on, a connection with the teacher. And they're going to be linked, so LARIC Teachers will be resources for teachers. Teachers can click on that LARIC Teachers, and that's where all the PD links and different things for teachers. The other slides as they come across will be for students, for program areas, so people can quickly and easily identify what they're seeing. The other thing that needs to be in every website is a call to action. So you can have a good website, but if there's no call to action, people don't really know what to do with it. So for us, because we really want it to be a place not just for teachers, but for students, we want to have a call to action of your future begins here with a simple click so that a student can click on, get the programs. The idea is that we're going to make sure that they can access catalogs so they know exactly what's going on, exactly what the program dates, times are. So we have an interactive map so that students can go on and say, gosh, I live here. I wonder if there's a program in my area. So they can look at the map, click on the map, and it'll pull right up that area, that school that has that program with times and contacts.
So I'm putting myself in the position of a second language learner. And I'm looking at the word LARIC, and I'm thinking to myself, what does that mean?
Right.
So I wonder, I know it's important to us, I know it's important to, but I don't know if on the front page for students, if that's, I mean, and by the way, I'm not being critical, I'm asking
a question. Oh, that's a great question.
I think it's a fantastic photo, communicates a lot.
But it's sort of like, who's the audience for the website?
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
Who's the audience for the website?
Is this the teachers?
This is going to be, so just so you know, each slide is going to be a different audience.
So this is not the home page.
So the home page, when they pull it up, right now we have some ideas. I'm actually going to be working with Kimo to
scratch my question. I apologize.
But the initial slider is going to spell out Los Angeles Regional Adult Ed Consortium with the acronym, with Achieves, with Leads. The idea for me is, and this is again just putting the cart before the horse, is it's going to be LARIC Leads. But it's going to be very clear how you click on it to get more information. We'll do Google Translate so that we can change languages so that if they're a Spanish speaker or Chinese speaker, they can switch and it's all translated for them. That way, I agree with you. A person who is a recent immigrant or somebody who's just acquiring the language, this is overwhelming. They're not going to know what to do with it. It's just going to be overwhelming. So we want to make that first page accessible,
right,
pull them in, but also just an easy call to action so that they can go, great, if they're a student, if they're a teacher, they'll see that slider come across and they'll click on it.
All right. Thank you. I know it'll be great. I apologize for you.
The bar is
high. I got it.
So the other thing is consortium members have been great about helping me acquire photo content. That was a big thing. trying to get enough content. We're also going to increase our imprint and footprint on social media with Twitter as well as Facebook. The other thing I've been working on is continuing to, we've reviewed all of the pilots, there were 70 of them. We're running them through the rubric, we're creating a synopsis for each of them, and we're going to whittle it down to our best practices, our best practices, and we'll get that to you shortly. Also, I was assisting Ms. Lee in a support position on that the Family Success Initiative that LUSD was rolling out. I went to one of the libraries that did a field trip recently, make sure we could capture that on film, on video, as well as pictures, so that people could go to the website as well to see what was going on, and also on the LUSD website, hopefully in the future, rolling this out to consortium members. Michelle referenced Montebello Job Fair, which we're going to have a presence at. So we're in the process of creating a LARIC roadshow where we can go out as LARIC and represent LARIC in the job fairs or in other events to get out there and represent consortium members. We're putting together all the materials right now. The question I think for us is, do we brand under LARIC and distribute, or do we carry all consortium members' materials separately so that they're kind of presented separately versus this is our consortium, these are the members, these are what programs are offered, in your area there's this. So I think that's the discussion in the office, and we'll ask for direction about that. And finally, I've been working with, Lindsay asked me to do a little support work on pre-apprenticeship, to get some language locked down for the MC3 certification and the MOU with one of the trade organizations, and going out and trying to see if we can contact and get more letters of support from unions to secure some more support for pre-apprenticeship programs. That's it.
Thank you.
That's great. Thank you.
Awesome. Thank you. Thank you. So now we have some information items. First, Michelle will, from the LARIC office, will report on data and accountability topics that were covered at the CCAE conference.
Let's see if the clicker works. A lot of the CTE conference I went to had lots to do about data and accountability, and I think it had a lot to do with the fact that when you start to look at what are we counting and how are we counting and how are we doing, that you're thank you for that. Yeah, it looks kind of like this. It's like, what? Who are we listening to? It's kind of what you're saying earlier. Are these priorities our priorities? And all of these things are things that we're bombarded with as staff and teachers and everything. Like, everybody has a different set of priorities, all these organizations. And it's how do you take all of that and then get it into, like, one data set so that we know what we're looking at. Can you click on this? I think you're just gonna have to click. So one of the presentations I went to was from the Capital Adults Education Regional Consortia, and that was that consortia is facilitated by the Sacramento County Office of Ed. They are also the organization that runs the AVG Technical Assistance Project. And they gave a great presentation on what they've been doing to try to deal with that data issue and try to get all those things all aligned with all of their members. And just to give you a sense of it, they have 14 different members. They have 11 school districts that are in their consortia, 2 county offices of education, and then 1 community college district that has 4 sites. And how they handled this is they created a data and accountability work group as part of their consortia. And who participates in that is they have all of their K-12 member districts participating, and primarily because they're using the same data system. So they don't have the community colleges folded into their work group on a regular basis because the community colleges are currently engaged in their own metric simplification initiatives. But they've been working directly with the K-12 districts and putting together monthly workshops on how to, and talking about the TE topics and figuring out how to get everybody aligned in all of those 11 school districts. Let's go ahead and put the next one. And one of the big thing that they came up with is that there is out there a TE dictionary. Like, if you go on the internet, you can find the Costas dictionary and how to fill out the TOPS report. However, if you read a couple of sections, it's still very vague on what exactly are we counting, and it's still very difficult to have that trickle down to that student filling out the form or that teacher bubbling in the form. And two of the areas that they looked at that were a priority to them were this notion of low literacy and low income. And the reason they chose those is because, you know, it's very clear what the outcomes are. It's very clear high school diploma, HiSET, those things, but what they wanted to look at is be able to show how they're serving their communities of need in their area, and so they were specifically looking at the barriers to employment that students fill out when they enter the program. And when you look at low literacy, there's actually a whole lot of different definitions out there that different programs use. So in one place on CASAS, it says low literacy is unable to read and write. And then another place is that, well, they're unable to function in the workplace. Somewhere else says it's basic skills deficient. What does that mean? Some of them, they decided that, oh, it's anybody who scores 235 or less on the CASAS test, or if anybody enrolled in ABE. So they found that there was a lot of discrepancy on how people are marking these boxes at all of their various school districts. And so what they wanted to do is create this group to come together to just get consensus on how they mark things. Same thing with low income. If you look at low income, even in the TE dictionary, it's somewhere between 12,000 and 60,000, somewhere in there. So there's lots of different criteria that you can qualify to mark the low income box. And I don't know to what extent, like, we're even sitting down with a student going, okay, do you fit into these categories when you mark low literacy or low income? So what they did is they got together with their whole consortia and they printed out their data integrity report, and they started looking at this. And this report shows what percentage of the students in each one of those districts didn't, in this particular case, didn't have any barriers. So what percentage of students didn't mark barriers? And when they looked at this, they found that there are some districts where they're at that 79% had no barriers, 30% had no barriers. And they were trying to think, why is one 79 and the other one 9%? So what is it that those other districts are doing differently? So they, at their data, at their workshops, they actually share ideas, and then they create action plans to go back to their school sites. So for this particular thing, they looked at the low literacy and low income. They created benchmarks, this particular consortium, just saying, okay, anybody who scores less than 235, we're going to count them as low literacy. And then everybody who hits this mark for low income, that's who's going to mark the box. And by just doing that, if you click to the next slide, they changed their statistics dramatically, that the school site with 79 goes down to 8% of the students have no barriers. And the district with 30% having no barriers goes down to 4%. So just by creating a common definition and people marking things where they never marked them before, or even just paying attention to it now because they didn't have their attention on it, now they can show clearer, you know, that they're serving their communities of need. And so I thought this was a very interesting thing because you're doing something with the data. It's not just looking at the data, but they're actually creating action plans around this data. So their major outcomes were they created these common definitions, and then they started developing products, like products that they're going to roll out to all of the different member districts. So one of the things they did was, in many districts, the students are the ones filling in those barriers. So they created definitions cards, laminated in 14 different languages, and then prepared them all in boxes and shipped them out to every one of the school sites. And so they actually, like, everybody was good to go and had everything they need to implement that. They created all sorts of tools and spreadsheets and things, and they brought everybody together to look at the data in the same way and then create those action plans. They also just created this whole communication network within their consortia that when anything new happens and they want to change anything, that they already have all the players in place to take all the information back to their school sites. So one of the things that looking at moving forward is this, the Sacramento County Office of Ed, there's like, look, if you guys don't have a data group in your consortia, you guys need to have one, just so that we have an opportunity to everybody get on the same page and everybody marking the same way. And then one of the other things that came up was there's a lot of really cool stuff. Like, while community colleges have a different way of keeping track of data and they're still developing their processes, I've been watching these webinars on the Community College Metrics Simplification Initiative, and there's so many really cool things that are in there that I think would be really great to look at for how we can put them into the K-12 setting, that it's not just focusing on the outcomes, but looking at equity and access, being able to show that we have a need here, especially if any funding formula gets created around serving communities of need. We want to be able to show that we're meeting that need. And then I thought that the community college is doing, that they have all these things about momentum and retention and progress, that it's not just measuring the one outcome at the end, but it's like, how fast are students moving through this? How do we keep students from one semester to the other, or even watching that, right? And then looking at beyond just graduating, getting the certificate, but how do we track those earnings, and how do we, you know, how do we improve the standard of living for our students? And then we would love to, going forward, like providing professional development for all of our staff and all of our consortium members.
I think this is you too, so you might as well
stay
there.
Stay right there.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Any
so
comments?
Are there any thoughts of coming up with state standard metrics so that all the consortia are reporting in the same way?
That would be just awesome. Like, so I mean,
that's
I don't
policy thing right there.
It would just be an awesome thing to do that, to just have like a standard way. Because if we're going to compare ourselves to Sacramento, we want to be comparing ourselves with the same data points.
Right. So on the agenda, I noticed it said recommendations for LARIC. So I'm assuming this was presented to give us some ideas or, hey, maybe we should think about X, Y, Z. So I'd be interested to hear if staff does have any recommendations. I mean, I think Bob kind of is hinting at it, and I'd love to hear what the recommendations might be.
But on the previous slide, that might, my number one recommendation is that we create a data and accountability work group.
Okay.
And then whatever it is that they create out of that, and when you're bringing all those people together, I think that I have no idea where it would go, but I think it's totally necessary. And especially in the world of having professional development, like it's very interesting to me that I work in two school districts, right? And I was a teacher in both of them. And it's very interesting that you would think there'd be just a common way that we bubble those forms. And for me, there's not. And even if we have a sense of it and we have a dictionary and the school says, oh, there's a dictionary, it's really clear that, you know, as a teacher in a classroom, all of that doesn't always trickle down. And then as a student sitting there bubbling the form, it's not always like, okay, if you're in this category, if you... So I would think that what I would love to have come out of that is just that we're all doing things in a common way, and then I have no idea where it goes from there. Maybe along the lines of, you know, like you guys have been talking about, that we start creating that statewide leading the way.
Yeah, because I know, like, back in the day, when I was a WEA coordinator, I remember... going to my favorite place, Vandekamp, and they had, and I think they still have, quarterly, you know, where school districts, community college folk, monthly, get together, and that's exactly what they talk about. At least they did when I used to go. I think Laura was at some of those, too, and I remember back in the day, she was a big wheel, you know, from LAUSD. But in any case, it was a great opportunity to kind of come together, you know, from different districts and really do kind of, I think, what you're describing is compare notes and really, you know, it was a very valuable opportunity to learn, but also to standardize, I think, practices. And so I guess... I agree. I think we should have some kind of a group like that. And if so, let's leverage what already may be going on instead of having to create something new.
And I love that with that particular group, that the consortia office was all about providing support. So they let the members, you know, drive what they needed in the field. And then the consortia office got together, like, look, what do you need? Great, we're going to create those. We're going to translate 14 languages. Here's the kit. What else do you need? Need spreadsheets? Great, let's do that. So they're able to do a lot of creation in the office because you have a full-time staff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was just going to add what you've already referenced. I think that there's a real opportunity for me, because it's something that really is dear to my heart, is create PDs, you know, the LARIC platform to provide PDs to the consortium. Because as classroom teachers, we all know that a lot of times some things will be disseminated, but the information really doesn't filter down into the classroom effectively. And I think that without that key portion of it, because, you know, the teachers are really the tip of the spear. If they're not carrying out...
It's where the data is coming from.
Right. They're not carrying it out correctly, it's just not going to work. So I think there's a real opportunity. We talked about this in the office. It's been referenced, but I think there's a real opportunity for us at LARIC to create effective PDs to really get sit down with teachers, not just to give them the information, but to explain why it's so important. You know, what the value of it is, so that they understand when they get that sheet, why it matters, what the difference is, because they're the real, you know, water carriers. They're the people who are actually, you know, they're the guys who are doing it for us.
Okay, so we'll take some of those recommendations and then see what we can do to move those groups forward. Okay, launch board.
Awesome.
We're trying to be done by 3:30.
I'll go quickly. This goes hand in hand with what we just talked about too. So, launch board. This is we just saw this webinar 2 days ago, and it's a new. Can we put this one? I need to check my clicker really quick. And one more. So this is a new thing, not online yet. Hopefully, will be coming online in July and then made available to the general education community a few months after that. The intention of this launch board is to be a statewide data system. It's designed so that you can look at programs in terms of their effectiveness. I'm going to make my clicker work. Awesome. And it's the intent is to facilitate conversations. Is what this is about. It's hosted by CalPass Plus. They currently have a whole community college pipeline that's already on there. So when I have screenshots of things, it's not actually from the adult education pipeline that's coming down, but it's actually from the community college pipeline. Is that what you mean? Awesome. So, and then a new tool starting in July will be this adult education part. And then they were very... What button am I supposed to... Am I clicking the wrong button? Never mind, got it. Okay. Launch board is... They harped on this over and over on the webinar. It's only a dashboard. That it doesn't create data. It doesn't collect data for you. It's not going to replace any of your current data programs. It is a tool for visualization. Okay. It's going to be able to have you look at data in a different format. So, and its usefulness is just not necessarily in... what it has on there, what it displays, but really its usefulness is going to be in you asking the right questions. So it's like, if you have the questions like, what happens to our students next? Where did they go? How does it turn out in the end? Those are the kinds of questions you get to ask that you can look at the dashboard for some insight. They said the dashboard is dumb. And what they meant by that was that it doesn't know how to fix your data. All it does is deal with the data that it's given. So their conversation was that it's very important that everything be coded in a way that you're going to get useful data back out of it again. So, you know, the whole garbage in, garbage out. So you need to make sure that we have good data going into it so that it's actually meaningful. When they designed the adult education pipeline, they actually created it out of the ABG field team. So this goes along with the, this goes along with what you were talking about, Dr. Miller, which is they have a state field team that's looking specifically at data right now.
Right.
And so that field team was, their recommendations generated this whole measuring our success report. So this data education pipeline was created out of information from that report. Also, they included, you know, AB 104 requirements, we owe a Title II metrics, and then they also looked at the existing community college pipeline to kind of mirror some of the content that they have available for the community colleges. What I liked about this is it's all about... It's not so much about data, collecting data as I mentioned, it's a data connector. So what it's going to do is it's going to take information from all these different systems that are out there already and then allow you to compare things from one to the other and then look at the information in new ways. So it's going to have all the information from the MIS database from the community colleges. It'll also have be linked to the EDD so that we can have employment and earnings data. It'll have... labor market information, K-12 data from CalPADS, and then also the K-12 adult ed data. And the whole notion of this is putting all that stuff together so that you can track a student from, you know, from enrollment all the way through the transfers to the different schools and then on to, you know, college, then the university, and then where do they wind up at the end with a job? Are they making more money? Are they doing better? That kind of thing. And then what does it look like? It looks like this. This is the community college pipeline, but they're going with a similar look for the adult ed pipeline. And basically it's live data that's in these boxes, and then you're able to click on these things. You're also able to filter the data. If you look at the top panel there, the gold bar, you can look at things by region, you can look at things by consortia, you can look at the whole state, you can drill down to the different school sites. So you can look at data in a lot of different ways. And then you'll also be able to produce, you know, all sorts of lovely pie charts and graphs and stuff. They also have, some of the data is going to be available so that you can download it into a spreadsheet and then use it to manipulate in other ways that maybe they didn't foresee. And they're actually going to have matching. So their intent is to be matching human beings. So they're going to take this student and match that student with when they enroll at the community college, with when they, you know, get a job or they register at EDD or they go on to the university. They're actually going to look at individual students. But what they wanted everybody to know is that it is still secure and it's still in alignment with FERPA, right, which is Federal Education Rights and Privacy Act. And that you're never going to see that kind of data on the launch board. You're only going to see aggregate data. You're never going to see individual student data. And they don't post any data on there that has fewer than 10 students in whatever search you do. But you will be definitely drillable by different demographics, drillable by the site. You can also look at, like, you know, macro regions. Like, if you want to look at Los Angeles and Orange County, you can look at those things, too. It's not going to be a public thing. It's not a public database. It is only for the education community. So their intent is not for anybody to use this data, you know, to point fingers at anything and why aren't you doing this and you guys are not doing as well as other schools. The whole intent of having this data available is for program improvement. So they want educators to be able to use this data. So it's not open to the public. Who it's open to is anybody in the member districts of Launch Board. So they have 1,500 different institutions that are actual members of Launch Board and have MOUs. And those, anybody working in those, any teacher, educator working in those will have access to it. You just have to send a request. And I checked, all five of our consortium members have MOUs with Launch Board and are already members. Let's see. It's designed to be a tool used by districts and educational staff for program improvement, not for the public. Okay, good. Okay, so their next steps are they going to release... They're using the data from school year 16-17 is its first release. And then as they accumulate more data, then more data will be available in there. They won't have a lot of the tracking data available at first because if they're starting with 2016-17, these students may not have gone very far yet. So in the years to come, it'll be a lot more useful as they get more data. The launch is July 2018. They're looking for selected field teams right now. They're looking for consortias to be a part of the field test for this summer. So that might be something that we might be interested in getting involved with. Let the program be further developed as the metrics start to solidify in the state, so they'll be changing it ongoingly. And they'll be having professional development coming out as soon as they release it to the general public. But for the summer, it'll probably just be a limited release to people selected to field test it. They said they would like us to break it first, and then they'll fix it and then release it to everybody else. And then what I thought was really interesting in the presentation about Launch Board is they were talking about they definitely want to provide professional development. And what was interesting is their professional development they're considering has nothing to do with this is how you click this and this is how you do a search. They're not interested in doing that stuff development. What they'd like to do is come out to the consortia and they want to talk about how do you immerse yourself in the problems and ask the right questions and get everybody focused on how do you utilize this to make a difference in your consortium, how you serve students, and a difference in your programs. So the preview is not so much about about clicking and what it can do. It's more like the conversation about it. And the intent here is to have you have the state pivot from dealing with compliance and, you know, earning pay points to looking at program improvements and how do we further develop our school.
Thank you. Questions? Comments? Well, it's, for sure it sounds like we've got lots of data, metrics, lots of stuff coming our way. Okay, thanks, Michelle. Dr. Mullen, who will share the timeline and plan for completing the 18-19 annual plan.
We have no timeline.
Okay.
Because it was presented at the last point person's meeting with 15 minutes left on the agenda, and we said at the next point person's meeting, we'll review that. Also, the state hasn't released the template. Mm-hmm. It was up on the system for a hot second. I mean, maybe a hot second. And so, and we have no data to write a plan at this point because we don't close our years until the end of June. So we're going to look at a timeline in our next meeting, look at the process that we've done in the past as point people, which I think has been very effective, and the way we review it and move it forward, which is using it as the regional plan as a foundation of what we're going to write for our next annual plan.
So when is the annual plan due, though?
Not until August 15th. So.
So August, like 3 months, three months from now.
So, and the state has put that timeline together because they know that member districts don't close their data for their classes, budgets, etc. until the end of June. And then,
yeah.
You know, so they put that, you know, there's a long lead time in there. So right now, everybody is looking at how to close out their years.
Mm-hmm.
This is kind of crunch time between finals and, you know, graduations and, you know, lots of different closeouts are happening right now. So we're cleaning all that up. So when we go to pull the data to write the plan, we'll be together on board. So we're going to discuss the process starting Tuesday. That's it. Any questions?
Sure. I don't have a question, but I wanted to say this. Dr. Mullen, I want to thank you for the leadership and expertise that you provide to the point persons and also to this consortium. Your being here means a great deal.
Oh, thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Amen.
Thank you.
Board member reports. You got like a minute.
Okay.
Who wants to go first?
I promise. Okay, I promise this will be short. Okay, so... So it's actually, this is a twofer, because it's my comment for item 5, and it's also for 6.1. So the discussion, you know, has been, we've mentioned the LAO report and the idea of kind of doing a deeper dive on this. So number one in the LAO report in terms of recommendation, I'm just going to read it, revamp adult education funding rules, begin by setting a uniform per student funding rate and consider building a performance component into the new funding system. So again, not to belabor the point, but I just kind of want to remind our colleagues here on the board that, you know, the state has called out LARIC with regard to the situation, you know, that Montebello is going through, which we're all aware of, in terms of, you know, setting a uniform funding rate. And, you know, of course, we have taken some action in January, you know, to redistribute some of the funds based on some of the recommendations we got from the state, but I do think we have a long way to go. So I would just encourage this board to make this item front and center in terms of policy and advocacy moving forward.
Okay. Amelia?
I, too, will be brief. Thank you for this opportunity. What I would like to request, Madam Chair, is that we consider, I hate to use this word again, but a board workshop where we bring our member libraries together for Burbank, for Culver City, for LA City, Community College District. I was listening to talk radio, I won't say which show, on my drive home, and I was moved by the role that our libraries are playing today, not just in educating, but in providing for folks' social welfare. and it's amazing. And I'd like to know what those are, and I'd like to know what programs they offer, and the challenges that our libraries are facing that maybe we, as a consortium working together with them, can assist with that. The other is, I love the presentations made by Justin and Michelle, and I want to advocate for the development of a standing professional development committee. This consortium is too big. We need a professional development committee that looks at the needs of each member and puts together a roadmap for the year ahead.
Thank you. Bob? Dr. Miller?
I just limit it to this. There is a great deal happening up and down the state, and there's a great deal of money at play supporting the various and sundry initiatives that are out there, including adult education. It seems to me that one thing that might benefit us is to recommend that all the consortia leadership appoint one person to a group that meets, at least telephonically, monthly, to just share what's going on and share, you know, good practices or best practices, share collective challenges that the field is having right now to help inform our policy agendas and to leverage the collective whole towards whatever the good of adult education needs to be. It just strikes me that for everyone to be working in these individual, I'll call them a vacuum, but at least moving forward in these individual ways is problematic. The Launch Board is a classic example of the community college system initiative supporting 72 districts and 114 colleges. And anytime we can do something on a statewide basis, we're better off than trying to do it. I don't even know how many consortia there are in the state, or adult consortia, but whatever the number is.
71.
So, you know, why recreate the wheel 71 times? So, and maybe 71 is too many to get together, you know, monthly, but whatever. I think we need to think about ways in which the consortia can work together maybe a little bit more effectively, if that's at all possible.
Dan?
To be real brief, as we spoke about earlier, on May 24th, which is next Thursday, we're going to be having a Career Tech Fair. This is our third annual one, probably our biggest one by far, and we're encouraging all members to come on out, and it's going to be nice to see the staff come on out, and we have quite a few surrounding community colleges as well coming out to share this event with us, so I'm looking forward to that. And then I would like to have some discussion on item 6.1 to kind of piggyback off of Mr. Stark's comments as well.
So I'm going to bypass my report so we can go into the next thing, which is 6.1, a discussion to move forward on the creation of a funding formula for allocation of LARIC funds. I think at our last meeting, it was suggested that we create a board workshop for this discussion. So I guess this is another protocol question, Bob, but do we have a motion to create? So I can just create a board workshop.
Yeah.
Pick dates.
Yeah, if the board is so inclined, it seems like they are.
And that's the one you wanted a board workshop on. And then my question was, do we want to discuss funding considerations now, or should we do that at the first board workshop?
I would advocate that should be done openly in a workshop setting.
Agreed.
Okay.
Agreed.
Okay. So was there some other discussion? So with board workshops, I guess my other question is, should we keep board workshops on Fridays kind of at the same time frame so whoever's coming, it just is on the same days?
Sure. Fridays could be in. I agree.
Okay. Okay. Then is there anything else we want to discuss about this funding formula?
Can I go?
Sure.
So this is open to discussion, correct?
Well, we're not going to take any action on it. What we decided is we are going to have a board workshop. The other thing was we could potentially have some discussion about funding considerations, but not necessarily proposals or formulas itself.
I understand. Okay, so if we're going to talk about, or I'll lead a little bit of a discussion in regards to the funding formula. Mr. Stark said that obviously LAO is looking at some type of funding formula that should be student-based, and I agree that, you know, we're going in that type of direction. I've also had conversation, though, with CDE, and they're actually not kind of entirely to wanting to jump into this type of mechanism, obviously, and I found that quite interesting. It's all pretty much local control. However, I know that Montebello is the only one that's been audited here, so I am asking, as prior to a formula coming up, that all the members are going to be audited prior to us coming up with a finalization of a funding formula. So some numbers may have increased and or decreased for other members within the district. So when we look at our auditing team that we're possibly looking to look into all of our members, I think that's something that we have to really look at, is the fact-finding of what the auditors divulged from our members here within our own consortium. Also, we have to be mindful of following the law of AB 104 and looking into some of those strategies in which they state that we must follow and or look into to continue to be on the same playing field. So those are just some of my comments. Prior to coming up with any type of finalization, we really have to look at a lot of different factors before just coming up with, you know, what had occurred, I guess, a few years back. That's all I ask.
I think, and that's really the goal of the workshop, is so that we can openly have discussions about what those things might be. Okay. Then there's no action that we're taking. Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, no, and so, yeah, I agree with everything you said, and I think, you know, just in some ways, I mean, although we were hoping for more money in the May revise, I guess the question would be, if we got more money, we'd have five different ways of divvying it up, like we always have, right?
Right.
So I think, again, this needs to be something that we, you know, like Dan and the others have said, you know, I think there's a real urgency here, so that, you know, when we start activating the policy and advocacy machine, be careful what you wish for, because mm-hmm. we're getting a bit, you know, millions of dollars thrown our way. We better darn well have a plan and formula and mechanisms to distribute the funds appropriately.
Okay, so the next item is 6.2. And in the board packet, this was from Mon. Where did Mon go?
Here.
Oh, there you are, right in front of me. I'm like looking right past you. So ratification of the proposed LAUSD workforce-driven administrators to counselors, teacher, advisors ratio applicable to LAUSD only. Do we have a motion?
I'll move it.
Do we have a second?
I'll second.
Discussion.
So we have a presentation first? Or are we just taking the action?
No, I think there's discussion.
To you guys.
Huh?
Is Mon going to do a presentation or anything?
Mon, do you want to explain what it is about?
Yes.
I just would like to ask the board's permission, since this was worked on by the previous point person, Mr. Matthew Oberlander, since he's more knowledgeable for the process, if it's okay with you, we have to come up and explain this to share out about it.
Sure. We get you again? Look, I might have let you off the hook with that if I knew.
And by the way, I need to apologize. There is actually a document here. So.
But, and
obviously I read it very carefully. please excuse me.
Yeah, I've got to be careful coming to these meetings.
Yeah.
You're still working.
That's right. So, yeah, good afternoon. As you may remember, I was the Columber Consortium point person for LAUSD. So in February, I spoke to you about the LAUSD administrator-to-teacher ratio. Specifically, I stated that per the state education code, LAUSD is required to calculate and report on an annual basis the ratio of administrators to teachers. I also mentioned that although the Division of Adult and Career Education has been excluded from this calculation historically, this year we are being included, and that we were working closely with the LAUSD fiscal team to develop a more equitable administrator-to-teacher ratio. So today I'm here to provide you with an update on that work, and that work is represented in the informative. So first, after reviewing DACE budget and program information, the district fiscal team recommended that DACE develop its own administrator-to-teacher ratio. This recommendation was based on the fact that DACE funding is completely separate from K-12 funding, and that the mission of adult education under AEBG is fundamentally different from that of compulsory K-12 education. Second, as noted in this board informative, the district recommended that two distinct ratios be developed, one for administrators and one for teacher advisors. This recommendation was based on the fact that teacher advisors provide direct and ongoing support in alignment with the LARIC Regional Comprehensive Plan. So the teacher advisor role is less administrative and more student-centered and pathway-focused. Third, as also noted in the board informative, the district recommended that the ratios represent a number that is not to be exceeded. In other words, the proposed ratios in this informative represent the highest possible number of administrators and teacher advisors, but they do not represent a required number. Actual ratios may be lower and are dependent on the need and on available resources. So we believe the ratios represented in this board informative, which would apply solely to LAUSD DACE and no other member districts, are fair and equitable, they align with the district recommendations, they honor the critical work done by our administrators and teacher advisors, and they will allow us to fulfill the LARIC promise of providing comprehensive support to all students. So we appreciate your support in ratifying this request.
Yes.
Oh, Dr. Miller, sorry. I'm looking at you, thinking. Yeah.
This is great. It's very understandable. I get it. I guess my only question is, why do we have to approve this? Isn't it just the internal business of LAUSD in terms of your requirement?
Right.
Because we all...
Right. No, understood. So do you want to address that? Or?
I could start.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah,
and then I'll tag in.
I have a similar
question
as well.
Yeah.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah.
So essentially it comes down to the fact that this is a separate funding and that it's a grant. And so because it's a grant, there's a language in the Ed Code saying if you have an established ratio under a grant, that supersedes the Ed Code that applies to the K-12 district.
So essentially your finance office and our Office of General Counsel is saying you need to do this.
Right. So the recommendation was, because LARIC is a formal, quasi-formal, whatever we are,
right,
voting body, makes decisions on behalf of ABG and the consortium, that because the whole goal is to really take the adult ed calculations out of K-12. Okay, K-12 is LCFF, we're ABG. We didn't want our numbers to impact their numbers and vice versa. So the thinking was if there was a formal action taken by LARIC that for purposes of audits and other mechanisms by which folks determine this calculation ratio, there would be board minutes and sort of something to look at that says, oh, okay, well, the consortium approved this separate funding, and so consequently, that would hopefully pass muster with whatever body was analyzing this. So that was the thinking behind it.
So that would.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah. No, go ahead.
I'm just going to finish my thought real quick. Is that wouldn't. This does not mandate that any of the rest of us do this, I don't believe. This is just
correct.
Something that LUSD
correct.
Needs
correct.
To do.
Yeah, and it says in the informative specifically that it applies only to us and
right.
No other member district.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, now if I may, Montebello follows the fair share model in regards to our administrative. So if there's a reduction in force, even though we are separately funded, I'm even talking about Montebello and or LA or any one of us here, how would that affect you, even though we have this document here saying that we're separately funded, that can still affect your administrative positions and or your advisory positions, correct?
Yeah, this is actually trying to maintain and preserve flexibility in that area because to give you a real world example, so we recently hired LAUSD, obviously, fiscal agent for a consortium. We've hired some new teacher advisors, and we have existing teacher advisors working on AEBG and so forth. So in the district's eyes, these are considered administrators, even though they're not really functioning as credentialed administrators like a principal or an assistant
Correct.
Principal. They're being counted as administrators, and they're being counted within the K-12 count. So this is trying to establish sort of a separation between, you know, the calculations done for K-12, which makes sense for them, and sort of getting us out of that, given, you know, what Mr. Oberlander shared in terms of our mission and what we're trying to accomplish, you know, not just with AEBG, but LEOA and aligning to the LERIC plan and et cetera.
And also the ratio is linked in terms of teachers and advisors and administrators. So if something were to affect teachers, it would affect students.
I guess one of my questions is, one, it sounds like a labor management area. So that makes me nervous about anything that, look, I don't want to get mixed up with your unions in any way, shape, or form. But it just, that ratio thing, when I looked at the numbers, it's basically 3.5 out-of-classroom teachers to 1 out-of-classroom teacher to 3.5 in-class teachers. So 10 to 100 and 20 to 100. So together, that's 30 to 100 out-of-classroom between teacher advisors and or administrators?
Yeah. So it's 1 to 10 in terms of the administrator, and then it would be...
2 10. To 10. So 3 to 10.
Right. Yeah. As an average of the two.
Three.
Are you adding them together?
It's 1 out-of-classroom certificated person, administrator, or teacher advisor, to 3 certificated in-classroom teachers. It's the way I'm reading this. Is that not the way it's... Because that's what it says. Recommended ratio of per 100 teachers.
Correct. So it would be... Just to be clear, so you have 10 administrators per 100 teachers, I believe is what it says.
Yes, and 10 administrators per 100 teachers.
Right, and then 20 per 100 for teacher advisors.
Right.
So are you adding them together to get the 1 to 3 ratio?
Yes, I'm asking if that basically is what it would come down to.
Yes, and the reason I'm clarifying is because... It's important in terms of it's informative that they're separated.
Yeah, no, I understand the separation. I guess as we move towards, we're talking about moving towards a funding formula and allocation in the future, and this makes me nervous about establishing something that will impact budgets. And I don't want to, I am worried about agreeing to something that then sets a precedent for priority for funding for LAUSD in the future based on this formula that we agreed on, that we would agree on today. Because my priority for funding would be my in-classroom thing. So that, I guess those were my questions with the 1 to 3.
A couple things that might help with clarification. So these are the maximum numbers that we can have, meaning we're not obligated to have that ratio. We can have all the way down to 1 per 100. We can have 9. But this just sets sort of a boundary at the top end.
What's your current ratio for these things?
What this is. So if you notice, it's not... We called it a ratification because that's what we currently have. If you look at these
Got
ratios,
it.
Right?
So you want them to be okay with what you currently have.
Correct. Which, you know, if we hadn't brought this forward, everyone on this board would probably, you know, wouldn't know one way or the other
right.
how we're doing it. So the only reason we're bringing it forward, as we mentioned, is to, again, provide flexibility in terms of LAUSD staffing vis-a-vis AEBG, right, whatever, you know, this ratio is up to a certain amount, and making sure it's not commingled with LCFF and K-12.
Mm-hmm. Okay, any other questions, discussions?
I do. So on the third page, Mr. Oberlander, these are, I find this particularly helpful, but I want to make sure I'm reading it correctly, is... You've got here ESL, ABE, CTE, Is this an example of how this would work out within these areas, where you'd have one? Is this a deputy sector navigator?
I'm going to get to that. I think it's an advisor and or navigator. Yes. So that we have the title navigator.
Okay. And then that would be for anywhere from 100 to 150 students.
Correct.
And then you have 3 to 5 teachers serving those 100 to 150 students. Correct.
Correct.
Okay. My next question has this been brought forward because of the term grant?
No, it has not. No. This has come forward because, as I mentioned, there's calculations that are happening on the K-12 side with regard to administrator-teacher ratios, and we're being lumped in with those calculations. Okay, our funding is not LCFF. That may be different. I don't know. I can't speak for other districts. But as far as LCF, as far as LAUSD is concerned, all of our adult education is funded out of AEBG in terms of state funding. So what we're trying to do is delineate ratios being separate and calculated separately from LCFF in the case of LAUSD.
So I would call the question.
Okay. So the vote is for ratifying the proposed LAUSD workforce-driven administrators to counselor-teacher advisor ratio, and that would be applicable to LAUSD only. Can I have a vote? So we're ratifying this actual document the way it is, right?
Correct.
Yeah, I'm not opposed to the document because, you know, I Joe's a great leader, and I'm not opposed to this document at all. I would never want to question his work. My question is, I'm still in a quandary about why I need to vote on this.
Can I take a shot at that? I think what they're asking us to vote on it because either they're fiscal people or their Office of General Counsel or some entities above them have said in order to differentiate AEBG funding from LCFF K-12 funding, they feel because the monies are coming from an entity that is controlled by LARIC, that they want it in writing, a document, minutes to that effect, so when some auditor or somebody comes to them, they can say it was approved by this body. They can also say to that body, hands off, this money is not LAUSD's money. Mm-hmm. It's DACE's money to provide adult education. It's something internal to their district, and I trust Mr. Stark and others here to know that this is just something that they're asking us to do. And you can come visit me every other Sunday if, in fact, this turns out to be a bad decision of mine. But I'm going to vote for this.
Okay. So can I call a vote?
I move.
So we already second. We just need the vote, Emilio. Burbank.
Yay.
LACCG. LAUSD.
Yes.
Montebello.
Yes.
Culver City. I'm abstaining. So the motion is ratified, approved, something like one of those words.
Ratified.
Sorry. Okay. The next item on the agenda is 6.3. It's to approve the LARIC webmaster contract proposal. Do I have a motion?
Madam Chair, yes. I motion that we approve the LARIC Webmaster School Year 2018-19 contract proposal.
I have a second?
Second.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
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 Aye. Mr. Stark?
Aye.
Motion carries. Item 6.4, delegate authority to LARIC project director to report the state Q3 expense and progress report upon receiving each individual district's chief business officer's signed expense and progress report. Do we have a motion?
I motion.
Do we have a second?
Second.
Discussion? I have a question. So my question is, if not do it this way, how else would we normally do it? Mon, sorry. Grace or Mon? What is new about this that it requires Lamsey to do it that and us not do it or whoever else is not doing it? I just want to know why what's different.
So this is just to cover all possible scenarios. Usually, like, when you input the budget, it's in the NOVA system.
Uh-huh.
But because the NOVA system, they said that it's going to be available by June, but we're not sure whether it's going to be available by June. So this is proposed because we want to cover all possible scenarios.
So what possible scenario are you covering? I'm just...
Just to make sure, because we're not meeting in June, that it's approved. By the executive.
So normally Lancey brings it to us and we approve it at a meeting?
That's my understanding, correct.
We all certify separately.
The consolidated LERIC budget.
The consolidated, okay.
That's correct.
And if we're doing it correctly, which we have been, the report comes to us first for approval before it's submitted.
Right.
Before it's certified.
Okay.
But in this particular case, now, would we just want to... do this for the 1 month, or?
Yeah, so if you don't mind moving forward with this, explaining this situation, is that once you have approved it, that we will, the executive team can officially approve it afterwards at the July meeting.
Okay, got it. Can we have a vote? Oh, wait a minute, let me say it one more time. We delegate authority to LERIC Project Director to report the State Q3 Expense and Progress Report upon receiving each individual district's Chief Business Officer's signed Expense and Progress Report. Burbank.
Yay.
Valley. We already did the motion and the second. That was the discussion. LA Community College District.
Aye.
I'm learning. LA USD.
Aye.
Montebello.
Aye.
Culver City, aye. The motion carries. Next item, approve proposed first half of 18-19 meeting dates. So that's 6.5 in your packet. First, I have to say, I love getting lists. So... do I have a motion?
So moved.
Second?
Second.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Montebello?
Aye.
LAUSD?
Aye.
Burbank?
Aye.
Culver City? Aye. Motion carries. Whew! We're almost there. We have nothing on the... yes, ma'am.
You just wanted to ask July 20th, is that a...
You know what?
Because why?
Yeah.
I'm working. Uh-huh. I'm still in session. I personally never am. I'm never off. So.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
I'm sorry, yes. But I will not be in town on the 20th of July.
Okay. So we do have discussion on this calendar. But we moved it to July 20th. Do we have a majority that will
be
here then?
We voted on it, actually. We've already voted on this.
Right.
So, of course.
So we're going to move forward, yeah. Emilio, if that's okay? Or do you request that we change it? It's not the board workshop.
Yeah, right.
And we won't be... probably do we will not do funding formula on that day. Okay, so can I get a vote for the calendar, or did we do that? And that we stopped again.
It's done.
It's done. Okay. Any announcements? We have no announcements.
Well, just one comment, actually, because I noticed we didn't have any items on the consent agenda, but I'd like to make a recommendation, if it pleases the board, Madam Chair, that in the future, when we have items that are more kind of operational, routine in nature, we can have a consent agenda and then vote as a block on those items. And if the, you know, it doesn't preclude discussion, it just, I think, helps kind of streamline the process so we're not necessarily going item by item on a number of issues that may just be sort of routine in nature.
Got it. So I understood that consent agenda did not include discussion. Is that not true?
No.
It can.
So
okay. So that's why I moved them.
Normally on the consent, you just ask, does anybody have an item they would like to discuss?
Got it.
And if the answer is no, then you vote. If the answer is yes, they just have that one item.
Okay.
People can pull items from the consent agenda for discussion or not. Okay.
Yeah, that's what I just said. Like you said,
yeah.
You said.
I'm sorry. Okay. There will be no meeting in the month of June, and then effective July 20th, our open meetings will now be referred to as regular meetings, and this just provides closer compliance with the Brown Act. I have another page. Hold on. Our next meeting will be July 20th, and we are adjourning the meeting at 3:40. Now what happens? That's it? This is when I need my little thing. Well, I thought we would do that when he's here.
Okay,
we
can do it
with
anybody or anything.
But
anyway, whatever.
Never mind. When he's here. Yes. Okay. Can you stop, please? What's that called again? Yeah, no, but what's it called? From the Peanut Gallery. This is the Peanut Gallery. Okay, I got to run. I literally have to get out of here.
All right, thank you,
all right.
Madam President.
I'm trying. So the reason I did, I saw stuff on consent, but all of them had, like, questions, so that's why I thought that you couldn't discuss it.
Yeah, when you've got, like, about 50 things like the USD has, it makes sense, but maybe it doesn't. Yeah, you know.
Right. But no, yeah, you know, okay. Thanks.
But sometimes the board will say, pull that from consent.
Yeah.
Right, because that goes to that. Okay.
All right.
Bye,
thanks,
guys.
Everybody.
Have fun.
Thank you.
All righty.
I'm having my first glass of wine today after 35
days. Hey, good for you.
That's what I'm really excited
about.
That's
right. Congratulations.
Well, you deserve
the most important thing.
You deserve it.